It's Great Mondays Radio, a podcast exploring how work is changing in the age of AI. I'm Josh Levine, a transformation executive helping private businesses elevate how their teams operate in an AI-driven world. On the show, I speak with executives, people leaders, and other humans rethinking how decisions get made, how managers lead, and how teams are learning to adapt. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 30 minutes, and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Great Mondays Radio. Lots of questions about what's happening in the work world today. We hear often from a lot of leaders on this in this podcast, and we have yet another one today. She is going to start off by helping us understand what employees are seeing and thinking about the current mess that is work these days. Chase Sterling is founder and executive director of Wellbeing Think Tank. She has a degree in organizational development and is an expert in well-being at work and reducing attrition. Welcome to Great Mondays Radio, Chase Sterling.
Hi, Josh. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here with your community today.
Yeah. So tell me a snippet, a minute or two about the Wellbeing Think Tank, just so I understand where we're coming from. And then we're going to get into some what you're hearing, listening to you about what you're hearing in the world from employees.
Absolutely. So I'm the executive director and founder of Wellbeing Think Tank. We are a 501c3 nonprofit charity, and our mission is to really educate and empower employers to create cultures of well-being in the workplace, balancing organizational health and performance with individual worker health and performance. Both of those things are critical to a successful organization. I have been somewhere in and around workplace well-being, organizational health, organizational psychology for almost 25 years now. And I've been on every side of the industry. I've been deep into the workplace wellness industry, into employee health, having been on the plan side, the broker side, the vendor side. I've worked in HR, been a consultant to HR. I've consulted with organizations internationally on how do we really create cultures of well-being that really attack the business problems of attrition and healthcare costs, two of our biggest expenses to our bottom line as companies. And so that is really my jam, is helping companies think strategically about how do we look at the big picture and stop siloing all these little problems at our organization.
Yeah. Great. So you're looking at the whole picture, and one of the things that you strategies that you employ is a bunch of social media listening. And I'd love to hear, I'm always curious about what other folks are seeing as it's kind of in the moment or coming around the corner. Tell me what the sentiment is, the employee sentiment is. And we, before we started recording, you talked about you kind of think about all the intergenerational responses. So probably there's some split there as well. So what are people saying out there about work beyond just, oh boy, this is tough.
Beyond that, it's a mess.
Because that part we already know. We talk about that a lot.
Absolutely. And I really like to focus on, you know, what does work look like when it's at its best? You know, imagine a world where when we all left work, we felt good. We felt uplifted. Just imagine the ripple effect it has on our home life, on our communities, on society as a whole. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of employee listening. I look at a lot of data directly from organizations and helping them maybe administer assessments. So doing that voice of the employee. I always like to say there's no such thing as survey fatigue. It's inaction fatigue is what people tire of.
Yep.
And then on social media, I've been doing this for a long time now. I've always been kind of an early adopter of social media and kind of just paying attention. And pre-pandemic, I really started this employee listening project where I intentionally sought out communities and threads on the workplace and what were people saying about it. So When I first started, a lot of the work was on TikTok, Reddit, and Twitter, or not so much on TikTok. Now I don't use Twitter really. It's primarily a lot of TikTok, a lot of Reddit. I pull a little bit from Threads and really just listen to how people are talking about the workplace. And I think it's really important because I see a lot of thought pieces come out, and it's people who didn't necessarily understand the trend, like, quiet quitting is not a bad thing. If someone wants to talk to me about why quiet quitting is bad, I'm going to sit there and tell them they didn't understand the whole social media trend because quiet quitting was about having boundaries and having work-life separation and actually having a life outside of work. It wasn't about doing less at work or not doing your best. It was just simply about giving yourself permission to have that time when you left work to focus on yourself. So, where we're at right now, it is very messy, but I do seek out a lot of those feel-good stories as well when people talk about great things that happen at work. So we have a lot of things going on right now. Obviously, we have a large segment of our population who's not working, who's maybe been laid off, and they're really struggling with how do they find employment. We have a large segment who is not happy in their current role, but we're in such an employer job market right now. They feel stuck, or maybe they have those golden handcuffs. So that's happening right now. We have our younger generation, who I have so much sympathy and empathy for, who are just trying to make it in this world, and they're really struggling to just find their way into work and survive. So they're really stuck in this survival mode of how many jobs do I have to work just to live? And then I think there's a lot of fear in some of our older generation. Are they ever going to be able to retire? Can they retire? And I think a lot of times when we talk about workplace well-being or culture in workplaces, we talk a lot about white-collar professional office environments. And I really like to listen to other types of workers as well, our retail workers, our restaurant workers, healthcare, construction, whether you're in an office, outside the office, shift work or not. Listening to all those different voices, I think, is really important to understand kind of what's happening in the world right now.
Have you, or what have you seen from younger workers who are entering the job force? There's a lot of discussion around younger folks not being hired or not having a place to land. We can have an argument around whether that's an AI or an economy thing or whatever it might be, but what are you hearing in that vein from the younger workers about coming out of college, finding something, finding a job at all?
It makes me think of this phrase. Several years ago, I was talking to a gentleman. His name's Brian Sexton. He's at Duke. He runs their Center for the Advancement of Well-being. And he said the opposite of depression is hope. And I think what we're seeing from our younger generation is the depression because they
That's
don't
right.
have
They
hope.
don't have hope. That's
They
right.
really don't have hope. I think before. And they've seen it. They've seen it a lot of times in their parents too, of we were sold if you do X, Y will happen. If we put ourselves, if we go to college and we do these things, we're going to be able to work and then retire one day. And some of them have now seen their parents are struggling. Their parents aren't going to be able to retire. Maybe their parents have struggled with burnout or strokes or health issues. And then they're trying to enter the workforce. They're struggling to enter. They're struggling to make a living wage. And then they're really thinking about the future. There's a quote. I do a lot, again, a lot of employee listening. And one of the surveys I did several years ago, it's in a lot of my presentations, and I keep it in verbatim. And I can almost remember it. And I remember crying the first time I read the survey. And this individual said, I'm coming to terms with the fact that climate change is real, and I'm never going to be able to buy a house, and I'm probably going to work until the day I die because retirement is just a fantasy. But I would really feel valued if my employer could give me a little more time off, paid time off, because maybe if I could travel and see the world, that would keep me motivated. And the question was like, what is the most important thing our organization could do right now to support, you know, your health and well-being? And they just went into this narrative of how hopeless they felt about the world. And it really, obviously, it really imprinted on me, but I think it really encapsulated the way so many of our workforce feels of I'm doing all of this, but what am I doing it for? And we can start to talk about purpose and things like that in the workplace as well. But the workplace and the worker, it really is a symbiotic relationship. And so we shouldn't be adversaries. We have to figure out how to come together. So in our society, and I know you talk a lot about, you know, capitalism and, you know, how does this work in our system? So we're in this capitalist system. We need thriving, successful organizations that are profitable. And we need them to support our humans, right? We need humans that are hopefully getting a part of those thriving wages, you know, and contributing. It's really a relationship. So how do we try to heal this relationship, which is very fractured right now? And I think we can, and I think there are organizations doing amazing work out there, but we need more organizations doing amazing work.
It feels in the zeitgeist like we're moving in the opposite direction. It feels like the message that workers are getting, which started with the kind of the quiet quitting moment where it's like, you're disposable. They're not, lo I'm the company is going to be loyal to you, so you don't need to be loyal to the company. But and now it's all these CEOs, at least the ones we're hearing about, are saying, well, if we can just replace these humans with the algorithms, with chatbots, with AI, then we're damn well going to. And while I doubt that we're going to be able to do that wholesale, I just don't feel like that is actually what's going to happen, at least in the short term. It feels like there's not even any facade that many organizational leaders, the ones that we put up on a pedestal, just don't value the humans. If we could get rid of you, we would. But if you're still here, that means we kind of have to have you here. And it, to me, speaks to that point about not having hope. You're like, what am I doing here? Right? You're asking me to spend my days here, and I don't feel seen, heard, valued. And I just wonder what that's going to do. Not that you have the answer, but I wonder what that's going to do to a generation of workers.
I agree with you. I've been asked several times recently, you know, is it going to keep getting worse? And I'm like, yes, we haven't hit the bottom
That's
yet.
yes, it is,
But
unfortunately.
before, we used to kind of go employer job market, employee job market. We've
That's
always
right.
had this ebb and flow, but now we're having this.
Yeah,
And
bigger and smaller.
several months ago, I was presenting and I didn't think I was going to do this. And I said, and we all know what happened a couple of weeks ago. And I started, you know, flicking the lighter because we had those warehouse fires going up of, yeah, employees aren't going to take it anymore. And they're going to show you that they're not going to take it anymore. And destroyed what? Over $500 million, I think, in materials.
What's
So that.
that? What is that? I don't even know what you're referring
Oh,
to.
yeah, that was a few months ago where employees started setting fires to the warehouses they were working in and said, if you're not going to pay us enough, if you're not going to pay us a living wage, well, then we're going to destroy your company. And they didn't, the company has way more money than that, but it is this relationship, right? It's when we have, just like you said, we put these organizations on pedestals and we're putting the wrong organizations on pedestals. If an organization is posting record profits, and why are we laying off your workers? And we all know you're laying off to inflate the stock prices because then this happens, and then you're in the cycle of you have to get talent again, and then but that destroys the motivation of all your humans. And we are going to use tools like AI. AI is not new. You know, it's been around for a long time. It's just the learning language models and other things are getting more popular. But we've used automation tools and AI for years. We're going to continue to use tools, but nothing can replace humans. Nothing can replace innovation. Nothing can replace, good old-fashioned social relationships, like getting back to relationship-based sales, getting back to developing relationships with your customers. That's what keeps an organization steady through the storm as well, is, your consumer who feels connected to you as an organization, who really identifies with your values and wants to support you and purchase from you. Like Dr. Bronner's has been growing so much recently because they've been so outspoken in their values and how they operate. And so their sales continue to rise because we're seeing consumer sentiment really appeal with that. So I think, as someone too who used to work in Silicon Valley and worked at one of those very large companies, it always kind of tickles me where people are like, oh, well, so and so is doing this. And I'm like, do you know what their attrition rate is? Because that to me is what a sign of a healthy organization is. If you're bringing in this many billions, but the average length of employment is 18 months, maybe not so much of a healthy organization. Maybe the culture needs a little work over there.
Yeah, I saw a post about railing against REI, which is Pacific Northwest outdoors sportswear company that is now a national organization. And they have always been a co-op. They've always been, kind of the people's brand. And their the piece that I was thinking about or read about was talking about how they are asking all employees to use AI and then used AI in a print ad or a an image. Which was and it was very sloppy, AI sloppy, which in and of itself is like, okay, whatever, par for the course. But it felt to me like the veracity with which, or ferocity maybe is the better word, with which there's that response, it is breaking the implicit agreement that the brand has always built with this with their community. And it struck me as so antithetical to their brand to kind of force this AI onto their workers, to force their AI into these shoots or whatever it might be. And it just felt like even they are succumbing to this kind of false idolatry of, every company must do use AI or they'll be left behind. And I just feel like that is, I don't, I know that AI is going to be with us, just like you said, but to contrast that with an organization that is true to its core values and understanding what it means to have a relationship with your customer, it just feels so much more important and sort of long-term thinking. And I think that to me is where we are at. And I've said as much, which is we are entering an era of scarcity and short-term thinking and panic, right? AI panic. And we're reacting and not actually making strategic decisions in that way. And I do think you're right. How do we elevate the right kinds of organizations? It's hard to ignore these organizations that are just breaking records as far as profits and stock price and IPOs. But and we need to elevate the kinds of organizations in that are doing that have a longer vision for this, I think. I don't know. I guess that's my question, right? Like you're saying, well, maybe it's more about retention or, low turnover. It's just not as sexy. And it just feels like who are our kind of who should be our heroes, our leadership heroes if we're not measuring by stock price?
It's a great question. I appreciate so much of the stories you shared there too. There is just a lot of consumer sentiment about that as well about AI and especially using it in marketing. So that's a big trend right now of users pushing back. And it reminded me there's also a farmer's market which recently kind of put out, you can't basically be a part of our craft fair, of our farmers market, if you're just like producing AI generated art and it's just blowing up. All the artists are like, yes, we can't wait to come support you. We want to buy from real artists. Like, thank you for putting this in place. But I think when it comes to companies, we tend to always look at like the Big Ten, right? Or the Fortune 100. And small business runs this country. Like, small business really is the backbone. And I think there's a lot of smaller organizations who are doing great work. I know you've had some leaders on who represented ESOPs and really talked about, you know, what do ESOPs look like, which I think is great. You know, that's one model. It's not right for every organization. I think there's feel good stories in the news too. Dr. Bronner's does have their rule that the CEO, I believe it's 20 times, is their policy that the C-suite cannot make more than 20 times your average wage worker, which again, in the 80s, we were talking about like 10 times. In the 90s, we got to like 100 times. And now the average is the C-suite makes over 300 times your lowest wage worker, which is
This
ridiculous.
is so unsustainable, the whole thing,
It's
right? It's
completely
just.
unsustainable. But I think I saw one company which sold recently, and I believe they were in manufacturing or construction. It was somewhere, maybe it was Tennessee, but they sold. And when he sold, he divided profits amongst the employees, and it was based on years of service. And there were people who were able to retire, or there were people who were moving to the new company, but they got $400,000. And he said, of course, he still had plenty to profit from and plenty to secure his livelihood and his families and secure, honestly, generational wealth for his family. But he didn't forget that your workers are the backbone of your organization. This is why your organization is successful. Like, you cannot do it all by yourself. If you're going to completely rely on automation, are you just doing it all by yourself? Or do you actually want to bring in some humans, that human talent, human innovation, innovate, iterate, you know, creative thinking? We're always going to have AI, I think, in the workplace now, but use it as a tool. And I view AI as kind of like, what can we automate? Where can we create efficiencies? But we don't want to use it to replace creative thinking and human innovation and relationships and all the special things that make up humanity. And that really create that positive workplace culture that you and I both talk about all the time.
Well, and it's a fool's errand to try to replace the creativity and the humanity. And we are learning, I think, in real time that there are certain tasks that humans are just going to be better at. They're going to need to be. And we've spent 2 decades trying to emulate computers and be more efficient and more ruthless, right? Like, you're a machine, that ideology. So it shouldn't be surprising when the mentality is, well, of course, we can just replace everybody with a machine because that's all we wanted in the first place. When in fact, it's really not that, that's not what humans should be doing, and we can't. And so if it's, like you could just imagine, like AI assistants emailing each other, right? Like, okay, so I don't need to be emailing, right? Like, that's not my thing, but I do think connecting with other humans and being creative, like if LLMs are just built on all the data that's ever existed, then you're only going to get the average of every, whatever the next possible word might be, right? That's all it is. So how do you're just not going to get new ideas with AI. And I'm not a doomer, AI doomer, but I do think we are being misled, and the paradigm is not right. And I hope that we can realize that collectively, and maybe in turn elevate some other leaders beyond those that are, making the absolute freaking most money possible.
Agreed. I think when I think about employee sentiment about this as well, too, a big a lot of things I'm seeing online and hearing people talk about is doing something like going into a brainstorming meeting and a leader saying, well, why don't we ask AI? So I'm like, so how demoralizing and defeating is it to come into a room where you're being asked to contribute and then the senior leader is dismissing, well, we should check AI first and see what they think about it. So from senior leadership to a frontline entry-level worker, that it again, demoralizing. It's just going to deflate everyone in the room. Like there's a time and place and understanding. And that's probably where more of your niches of helping leaders under when is it time to do this? That is not the time. There is a time and place to maybe leverage AI and bring it in. And then there's a time to really be together as a team and not have it in the room. And we don't need to gut check it with this. Hey, maybe check it for spelling errors or did you miss something? And grammar, not my strength. That's something I might use it for. But let your creatives be creative. Let people use their brains. Like, oh my gosh, brainstorming with an AI. Like, can we get back to the yes and game, please? Like, let's get back to that.
I do think there is a possibility, but we have to a possibility to learn how to use AI in the room, and but we are not facile at it yet, and it's we're using the tool, we're using a wrench to hit a nail, and it's not the result is not what we were hoping for. So we have no guardrails. It can do anything, and that's really where I think we struggle. What do you see next as we kind of wrap up the last part of this conversation? Where are we headed? What are employees thinking is next, and what are you hoping for?
Well, I do think things are going to get a little worse still, but I like to stay grounded in the positive and optimism. I think something that really gives me hope and fills my cup is the amount of individuals I meet every single day who want to make their own workplace better. So, you and I are practitioners. We do this day in and day out, but there are just regular workers who might be in healthcare, they might be in construction. Again, they have a different job that they really do, but they're thinking about how can I make things better because they want to be a part of this process. So that, and that's what I see so much at Think Tank is there's so many different people who come and it's because they want to know what can they do. And culture is owned by everyone. It's not owned by one person at an organization. And the worst behavior you tolerate is your company culture. So when we get everyone understanding that they can role model, that they can do it, that they can help influence culture, and it starts with them and their behavior and how they're going to work, then they feel more empowered and in control of their situation. So that gives me a lot of hope. And most of my presenting tends to be at like conferences. So I'm very lucky to interact with a lot of leaders in that way. And I was recently at an amazing conference where I have to say, every single person in that room, Josh, no one was on their phone, no one was on their computer. They were locked in.
That's
And
amazing.
afterward, they were just like, we want to make things better. They weren't the C-suite, they were just under. And so they were really like, how can we do this? How can we help influence the person above me? Because I know this is important. But that gives me a lot of hope and optimism. I think just seeing the collective of this is not sustainable. So what can I change? What is within my control to change? And I'm going to focus on that. And I think if we get enough people doing that, that's how we make a movement and things get better and we grow and holding organizations accountable.
I'll add to that and say there's another path that I believe, or at least I'm watching for, which is that many of these folks that are leaving school for the first time can and will start their own businesses. And that's how they can ultimately have control over what's possible and lead from a place of, something that's different. It's not easy, and there's not a lot of stability when you start your own business, which is not what you want when you have a ton of student debt. But I do think we're and we after we get through the worsening, I do think we're going to be in a golden age of the small business and the entrepreneur, and We can build anything with AI now, and so I think it will be built, and that's my, I think that was that you articulated from the inside. I'm seeing this from the outside, and I think there's real possibility, and I think we just all have to come to a new definition of what success might look like in the future, and that's my hope, at least.
Agreed. Yeah, it would be great to see a different definition of what constitutes a healthy organization, a positive organization, a successful organization. It's
Yeah.
so much more than just profits.
Yeah.
I think looking at other data points is really critical. How are you treating your workforce?
Yeah.
And that's what I care about.
How are
And
you treating humans?
yeah,
Right? Like at
absolutely.
work and in the world, I think is ultimately where we're coming back to. It doesn't need to be the most efficient product. It's like stop and say hi. And that's, I think we're missing that. So here's to hoping that things, the attitudes will turn around and our discourse will improve in a positive direction. Chase Sterling, founder and executive director of Wellbeing Think Tank. You can find her at wellbeingthinktank.org. Thank you so much for coming on Great Mondays Radio. It was so wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Josh. I appreciate you and I appreciate your community.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest on our program, head over to radio.greatmondays.com and fill in the application. Have a friend you think would find this episode interesting? Send it to them. And while you're at it, rate and review. It really helps. I'd love to connect. Send me an email, josh@greatmondays.com. And if you're interested in learning more about how I help private businesses elevate how teams operate in an AI-driven world, check out greatmondays.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.